At this point there was a knock at the door, and a boy put in his head.
What is it?
Said the old man. From the Black Eagle, said the boy, walking in sideways and depositing a basket on the floor with a noise of shaken bottles. The old man helped the boy to transfer the bottles from the basket to the table and counted the full tally. After the transfer, the boy put his basket on his arm and asked,
Any bottles?
What bottles? Said the old man. Won't you let us drink them first? Said Mr. Henchy.
I was told to ask for bottles.
Come back tomorrow, said the old man.
Here, boy, said Mr. Henchy. Will you run over to O'Farrell's and ask him to lend us a corkscrew? For Mr. Henchy, say. Tell him we won't keep it a minute. Leave the basket there.
The boy went out, and Mr. Henchy began to rub his hands cheerfully, saying,
Ah, well, he's not so bad after all. He's as good as his word, anyhow.
There's no tumblers, said the old man.
Ah, don't let that trouble you, Jack, said Mr. Henchy. Many's the good man before thou drank out of the bottle.
Anyway, it's better than nothing, said Mr. O'Connor.
Ah, he's not a bad sort, said Mr. Henchy. Only Fanny has such a loan of him. He means well, you know, in his own tin-pot way.
The boy came back with a corkscrew. The old man opened three bottles and was handing back the corkscrew when Mr. Henchy said to the boy,
Would you like a drink, boy?
If you please, sir, said the boy. The old man opened another bottle grudgingly and handed it to the boy.
What age are you?
He asked. 17, said the boy. As the old man said nothing further, the boy took the bottle, said, Here's my best respects, sir, to Mr. Henchy, drank the contents, put the bottle back on the table, and wiped his mouth with his sleeve. Then he took up the corkscrew and went out of the door sideways, muttering some form of salutation.
That's the way it begins,
said the old man.
The tin end of the wedge, said Mr. Henchy.
The old man distributed the three bottles which he had opened, and the men drank from them simultaneously. After having drunk, each placed his bottle on the mantelpiece within hand's reach and drew in a long breath of satisfaction.
Well, I did a good day's work today,
said Mr. Henchy after a pause.
That's so, John.
Yes. I got him one or two sure things in Dawson Street. Crofton and myself. Between ourselves, you know, Crofton. He's a decent chap, of course, but he's not worth a damn as a canvasser. Hasn't a word to throw to a dog. He stands and looks at the people while I do the talking.
Here, two men entered the room. One of them was a very fat man whose blue serge clothes seemed to be in danger of falling from his sloping figure. He had a big face, which resembled a young ox's face in expression, staring blue eyes and a grizzled moustache. The other man, who was much younger and frailer, had a thin, clean-shaven face. He wore a very high double collar and a wide-brimmed bowler hat.
Hello, Crofton,
said Mr. Henchy to the fat man.
Talk of the devil.
Where did the booze come from? Asked the young man. Did the cow calve?
Oh, of course, Lyons, spots the drink first thing, said Mr. O'Connor, laughing.
Is that the way you chaps canvass? Said Mr. Lyons. And Crofton and I out in the cold and rain looking for votes.
Why, blast your soul, said Mr. Henchy. I'd get more votes in 5 minutes than you two would get in a week.
Open two bottles of stout, Jack, said Mr. O'Connor.
How can I? Said the old man. Well, there's no corkscrew. Wait now. Wait now,
said Mr. Henchy, getting up quickly.
Did you ever see this little trick?
He took two bottles from the table and, carrying them to the fire, put them on the hob. Then he sat down again by the fire and took another drink from his bottle. Mr. Lyon sat on the edge of the table, pushed his hat towards the nape of his neck, and began to swing his legs.
Which is my bottle?
He asked.
This lad,
said Mr. Henchy. Mr. Crofton sat down on a box and looked fixedly at the other bottle on the hob. He was silent for two reasons. The first reason, sufficient in itself, was that he had nothing to say. The second reason was that he considered his companions beneath him. He had been a canvasser for Wilkins, the Conservative, but when the Conservatives had withdrawn their man and, choosing the lesser of two evils, given their support to the Nationalist candidate, he had been engaged to work for Mr. Tierney. In a few minutes, an apologetic pock was heard as the cork flew out of Mr. Lyons' bottle. Mr. Lyons jumped off the table, went to the fire, took his bottle, and carried it back to the table.
"I was just telling them, Crofton," said Mr. Henchy, "that we got a good few votes today."
"Who did you get?" asked Mr. Lyons.
"Well, I got Parks for one, and I got Atkinson for two, and I got Ward of Dawson Street. Fine old chap he is, too. Regular old tough, old conservative. But isn't you candidate a nationalist?" said he. "He's a respectable man," said I. "He's in favour of whatever will benefit this country. He's a big ratepayer," I said. "He's extensive house property in the city and three places of business. And isn't it to his own advantage to keep down the rates? He's a prominent and respected citizen," said I, "and a poor law guardian. And he doesn't belong to any party, good, bad or indifferent. Now that's the way to talk to them."
"And what about the address to the king?" said Mr. Lyons after drinking and smacking his lips.
"Listen to me," said Mr. Henchy. "What we want in this country, as I said to Al Ward, is capital. The king's coming here will mean an influx of money into this country. The citizens of Dublin would benefit by it. Look at all the factories down by the quays there, idle. Look at all the money there is in the country. If only we worked the old industries, the mills, the shipbuilding yards, and the factories. It's capital we want."
"But look here, John," said Mr. O'Connor. "Why should we welcome the King of England? Didn't Parnell himself..."
"Parnell," said Mr. Henchy, "is dead. Now here's the way I look at it. Here's this chap come to the throne after his old mother keeping him out of it till the man was grey. He's a man of the world and he means well by us. He's a jolly fine decent fella if you ask me, and no damn nonsense about him. He just says to himself, 'The young one never went to see these wild Irish. Be Christ, I'll go myself and see what they're like.' And how are we going to insult the man when he comes over here on a friendly visit, eh? Isn't that right, Crofton?"
Mr. Crofton nodded his head.
"But after all now," said Mr. Lyons argumentatively, "King Edward's life, you know, it's not the very..."
"Let bygones be bygones," said Mr. Henchy.
"I admire the man personally. He's just an ordinary knockabout like you and me. He's fond of his glass of grog, and he's a bit of a rake, perhaps, and he's a good sportsman. Damn it! Can't we Irish play fair?"
"That's all very fine," said Mr. Lyons. "But look at the case of Parnell now."
"In the name of God," said Mr. Henchy, "where's the analogy between the two cases?"
"What I mean," said Mr. Lyons, "is we have our ideals. Why now would we welcome a man like that? Do you think now, after what he did, Parnell was a fit man to lead us? And why then would we do it for Edward VII?
"This is Parnell's anniversary," said Mr. O'Connor, "and don't let us stir up any bad blood. We all respect him, now that he's dead and gone. Even the Conservatives," he added, turning to Mr. Crofton.
Pock. The tardy cork flew out of Mr. Crofton's bottle. Mr. Crofton got up from his box and went to the fire. As he returned with his capture, he said in a deep voice,
"Our side of the house respects him because he was a gentleman." "Right you are, Crofton," said Mr. Henchy fiercely. "He was the only man that could keep that bag of cats in order. Down, ye dogs, lie down, ye curs. That's the way he treated them. Come in, Joe. Come in," he called out, catching sight of Mr. Hines in the doorway.
Mr. Hines came in slowly.
"Open another bottle of stout, Jack," said Mr. Henchy. "Oh, I forgot there's no corkscrew. Here, show me one here, and I'll put it at the fire."
The old man handed him another bottle, and he placed it on the hob.
"Sit down, Joe,"
said Mr. O'Connor. "We're just talking about the chief."
"Aye, aye,"
said Mr. Henchy. Mr. Hines sat on the side of the table near Mr. Lyons, but said nothing.
"There's one of them anyhow," said Mr. Henchy, "that didn't renege him. By God, I'll say for you, Joe. No, by God, you stuck to him like a man."
"Oh, Joe," said Mr. O'Connor suddenly, "give us that thing you wrote. Do you remember? Have you got it on you?"
"Oh, aye," said Mr. Henchy. "Give us that. Did you ever hear that, Crofton? Listen to this now. Oh, splendid thing."
"Go on," said Mr. O'Connor.
"Fire away, Joe."
Mr. Hines did not seem to remember at once the piece to which they were alluding, but after reflecting a while, he said,
"Oh, that thing, is it?
Sure, that's old now."
"Out with it, man," said Mr. O'Connor.
"Shh, shh,"
said Mr. Henchy.
No, Joe.
Mr. Hines hesitated a little longer. Then, amid the silence, he took off his hat, laid it on the table, and stood up. He seemed to be rehearsing the piece in his mind, and after a long pause he announced, "The Death of Parnell, 6th October, 1891. He cleared his throat once or twice, and then began to recite. "He is dead. Our uncrowned king is dead. O Aaron, mourn with grief and woe, for he lies dead whom the fell gang of modern hypocrites laid low. He lies, slain by the coward hounds he raised to glory from the mire, and Aaron's hopes and Aaron's dreams perish upon our monarch's pyre. In palace, cabin or in cot, the Irish heart, where'er it be, is bowed with woe, for he is gone, who would have wrought our destiny. He would have had his Aaron famed, the green flag gloriously unfurled, her statesmen, bards, and warriors raised before the nations of the world. He dreamed, alas, 'twas but a dream, of liberty. But as he strove to touch that idol, treachery sundered him from the thing he loved. Shame on the coward caitiff hands that smote their lord, and with a kiss betrayed him to the rabble rout of fawning priests, no friends of his. May everlasting shame consume the memory of those who tried to befoul and smear the exalted name of one who spurned them in his pride. He fell, as fall the mighty ones, nobly undaunted to the last, and death has now united him with Aaron's heroes of the past. No sound of strife disturb his sleep. Calmly he rests. No human pain or high ambition spurs him now the peaks of glory to attain. They had their way. They laid him low. But Aaron, list, his spirit may rise like the phoenix from the flames when breaks the dawning of the day that brings us freedom's reign. And on that day may Aaron well pledge in the cup she lifts to joy one grief, the memory of Parnell." Mr. Hines sat down again on the table. When he had finished his recitation, there was a silence, and then a burst of clapping. Even Mr. Lyons clapped. The applause continued for a little time. When it had ceased, all the auditors drank from their bottles in silence. Puck. The cork flew out of Mr. Hines' bottle, but Mr. Hines remained sitting, flushed and bareheaded on the table. He did not seem to have heard the invitation. "Good man, Joe," said Mr. O'Connor, taking out his cigarette papers and pouch, the better to hide his emotion.
"What do you think of that, Crofton?"
cried Mr. Henchy.
"Isn't that fine? What?"
Mr. Crofton said that it was a very fine piece of writing.